Hello, everyone. Amazing silence. Hello, everyone. I'm Chetan Bhatt. I'm director of the Centre for the Study of Human Rights at the LSE, and I'd like to very warmly welcome you to this event, My Escape from North Korea, with Hyeon-soo Lee. And this event is hosted by the Centre for the Study of Human Rights in partnership with the LSE Student Society, the Korea Future Forum. And I'd very much like to warmly welcome you to this event on a Friday evening. You've decided to be here on a Friday evening rather than elsewhere. Now, this event has generated an extraordinary amount of interest. When my wonderful co-hosts from the Korea Future Forum, who've been the key drivers for this event, put the tickets up for the event, they went. Not in a week, not in a day, but in 3 minutes. So we had to disappoint a lot of people. Now, I did briefly think that whether the tickets had been booked by Kim Jong-un to stop all of you coming here, but I'm very pleased that that wasn't the case and that you are here with us. So, but we've had to disappoint a lot of people, and I know people wanted to come, but can I just say for them that this event is being podcast in a day or so and will be available from the Centre's website. Now, I know the Korea Future Forum would like to say a few words before we begin, so may I introduce its president, Sang-min Lee.
Thank you for the introduction, Professor Bhatt. So good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Sang-min Lee. I'm the president of the Korea Future Forum. So on behalf of the society, I'd like to express gratitude for your extreme interest in the event with Ms. Hyeon-soo Lee. So this event will be an opportunity to hear about the struggle of her living in perhaps the most contemporary country in the world and her experience of human rights in her home country. The KFF hopes that this event will raise awareness and moreover inspire key discussions on such a significant contemporary matter of the Korean Peninsula, and as well as the broader issues facing refugees and defectors around the world. Before I pass on to Mr. Professor Bhatt, to give a short introduction to our society, we aim to promote an interesting and in-depth analysis of political, economic, and social factor regarding the Korean Peninsula. Our main event is the forum in February. It will be held under the provisional agenda of the anniversary of 5th year marking the EU-Korea FTA. Apart from that, we also have plans to hold the event with the China Development Society, such as discuss the issues among the Comfort Women or the Tokyo Island, and moreover. So thanks for your time, and I will now pass back to Professor Bhatt, and who will introduce to Ms. Hyeon-soo Lee. Hope you enjoy.
Thank you very much. And can I just say how helpful this student society has been, not in just working with us, but in planning this event and in stewarding and looking after you and making sure that we get in smoothly and leave smoothly and so forth. Now, the theme for this evening is the harrowing personal story and the political context behind it. And it concerns North Korea, which is regularly considered to be one of the world's most closed societies, a dictatorship or a hereditary dictatorship dominated by a cult of personality and severe systematic violations of human rights. And by severe violations, we're talking about the whole panoply of human rights violations, from political and civil rights through to socio-economic rights and other social rights. And it's often considered to be not just a dictatorship, but also a totalitarian state that has control as a total society over its citizens. And so the violations are comprehensive and minute. They're large and they're small and affect all aspects of life. So I'm very, very honoured to be able to introduce to you Hyeon-soo Lee. She's a North Korean defector living in Seoul in South Korea. And she's given testimony about North Korean human rights in front of a panel of the UN Security Council, to ambassadors who are based at the UN. And she's recently completed her undergraduate studies in English and Chinese at the Hancock University of Foreign Studies. And I was just talking to her briefly about what she might want to do next. And she said, LSE, human rights. So yes, we'd be delighted to have you here. Yeonseo spends much of her time speaking, in fact, about North Korean human rights and refugee issues, including talks at various universities, including Stanford and Princeton and New York, and at various venues throughout Europe. And she's appeared in numerous international publications, including the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and interviewed by various news outlets and media outlets, of course, including the BBC and CBS and so on. Now, her memoir, The Girl with Seven Names, a North Korean defector story, was published in July 2015 in more than 20 countries, and she's currently working on her second book, which is related to women refugees from North Korea. And she plans also to help establish and help an organization to help North Korean refugees interact with and work with the international community. Now, just to tell you a little bit about the format, briefly, Yeonseo will speak for about 20 minutes, and then after this, I'll be talking to her about several areas related to human rights in North Korea, her escape, her thoughts on the future for human rights in the region, and the future of that particular dictatorship. Now, in planning for this event, we thought we'd ask the public for some questions, and the questions poured in. So I'm going to include some of those questions in my conversation with Yeonseo, but also to let you know there's plenty of time for your questions later. So don't worry about that at all. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this event is being recorded, and there'll be a podcast of this lecture soon after. Both the lecture and the question and answer session will both be recorded. And it's also being filmed by KBS, which is South Korea's national broadcaster. And this event is also being live-tweeted, and we encourage you to comment on this event using Twitter and the hashtag LSE Korea. But can I please ask you to turn your phones and other electronic devices to silent? The event has to finish by 8 o'clock, but there's an opportunity after the event to meet Yeonseo and to get signed copies of her book just outside this theatre. Now, Yeonseo's story is a powerful, courageous, and a humbling one. And I'd like you to extend your warm welcome to Yeonseo Lee.
One of the most important things that North Korean people have to learn is that we can't trust anyone, because friends, classmates, and co-workers are forced to spy on each other and criticize each other. So my mom trained me since I was young to not to say anything bad about the government and the system, because someone will hear you. The words have ears and the fears have eyes, she said. Also, speaking out against the regime is unthinkable, because one of my friend's father said simply to his best friend, "This system is unfair," and his whole family disappeared in the middle of the night. But there are only one of many families was sent to the political prison camp where over 100,000 people are continually suffering in forced labor, tortured, and death. The North Korean regime taught us to hate these people. So I believed people in political prison camp in public execution are traitors who deserve to be punished. So I didn't know that many offenses in public execution are insane, such as killing a cow, practicing religion, making contact with people in South Korea, and helping people out of the country, and even watching foreign media. Also, I didn't know it's wrong for the young children to watch public execution, because we are forced to watch public execution. And I saw first one when I was 7, and a man was hanging by his neck under a railroad bridge. And I saw another one during the famine when the authorities shot a man in his head in front of his family. So the constant public executions are reminding me that I shouldn't do anything to disobey all government. Otherwise, I will be killed, exactly the people in front of me. And growing up in this environment, I was initially so brainwashed that I believed the dear leader was God, who didn't even go to the bathroom. And my country was a paradise, but I slowly began to see the truth as I witnessed the poverty, starvation, and hunger. But in the past, I saw people on the street, there's beggars, homeless people, even before the famine, but I thought they're unlucky, just that they're born like beggars, because in North Korea, we have a social hierarchy system. But from mid-1990s, I was so scared because I saw so many people just beggars. They were just filling the street and the markets. And I can never forget the shock and heartbreak I felt when I saw a dying mother holding her starving child on the street. And as well as my friend's humiliation that she couldn't even offer me a simple lunch, because her whole family had nothing to eat. During the famine, if we go to the near the train station or under the bridge, we could easily see those dead bodies, and those bodies didn't remove so fast, so the smells of decomposing of bodies were everywhere, and they're making people feel sick and goosebumps as they passed. And my city was it's Haesan, so right next to the border with China. And then every day we have a lot of visitors from China. So if we don't remove those bodies, it would look shameful for North Korean, for my country. That's why at the time, there's a certain people, their job is removing those dead bodies, and they used hand carts to remove bodies, and then they just stacked in piles. And there's one time there's a man who didn't die yet, but they put him among the dead bodies. But I was a very lucky once, because I always had enough things to eat. I never suffered hunger, and more importantly, since my home was just right across the river from the China, so I could pick up several Chinese TV channels. It's illegal to watch Chinese TV in North Korea, so I did my best to hide by blocking the windows with extra thick blankets. And I turned the volume off. And that's just Chinese TV completely transformed my life, because in North Korea, we only have one TV channel. And every day what I heard from the TV was "Oh dear leader's name" 100 times, all propaganda words. But from Chinese TV, just so colorful, the characters, everything, to me like more open, and then they're economically more developed than my country. So first time from beginning, I was confused whether this Chinese TV is fake or real fake, the life in North Korea. So, but more and more if I'm watching TV, I just realized maybe North Korea is not the best in the world. No North Koreans, until the moment they cross the border, they realize they're suffering under the dictators or the country. Yeah, but to me, because these days more defectors are more realizing, more because of the border, through the border, there's many informations fled into North Korea, but at that time, I was 1997, I was certainly the first case who experienced the foreign outside media, and then somehow I learned myself North Korea is not a paradise. That's why it made me to cross the border. But as a young, naive girl, I could never imagine that I would be separated from my family for so long, nor could I have realized that I would be hunted by the Chinese authorities in China, and I had to be avoid the brilliant new world in China. And I was even caught, captured by the Chinese police in China, and I narrowly avoided being repatriated to China by convincing them that I was actually a Chinese citizen. due to all the dangers surrounding me, that I had to change my name constantly to protect my identity. So I became the girl with seven names, which is the title of my memoir. But talking about my family was the most difficult part of writing in the book, because I had to reopen my deep emotional scars that are long agonized separation. While I was living in China, I cried countless nights, and I staring at the moon, hoping my mom would get there at the same time, and I would talk to the moon as my way of talking to my mom. So still, whenever I see the moon, it reminds me the many depressing years of separation that I couldn't see my family. So many people around the world might take their time with the family members for granted, but for North Koreans, we are painfully aware of how that time is precious. People who read my book often ask me, if you could take a time machine to age 17 when you were about to cross the border alone, would you do it again? I could not. Eventually, I got real freedom, but to have this freedom, I paid the biggest price, and leaving behind everyone I loved and 17 years of memory. I could sacrifice myself for freedom, but I could never risk again the long separation with my family or see them in such pain. After surviving numerous encounters with the Chinese police and my family's imprisonment in Laos, I was finally united with my family in about 13 years later. So we finally united together in South Korea in 2010. So when I look back on my life, I sometimes wondered how I endured certain situations and difficult periods, but it has been such an incredible journey. I had to overcome so many obstacles in my life, so my life was like a roller coaster. I always wondered why I had to suffer this much, why people have freedom, family all together. And the reason I found was because simply I was born in North Korea because of the scene I was being born in there. I am one of the lucky North Korean defectors who can share my story and the hardships that all people face. But too many North Koreans are still living in the darkness in the country, whether they in the virtual prison without even knowing about the truth. Or also so many North Korean defectors living in fear outside their homeland. Because again, the countless North Korean women are suffering in China. Even at this moment, they are sold. They are first sold into sex slavery and sold as a prize to men in China. The UNCOI report also documented the unfortunate situation for North Korean women in China last year. Of those who escaped North Korea, most are women, and many of them are not fully aware of the dangers they face after crossing the border into China. And then many of them, they believed they can make money, some money in China, and then they can help their families back home. But in reality, they are sold from the human traffickers. Well, because the gender imbalance has driven up the demand for women in China. So conditions of these North Korean women are usually atrocious, and they live in incredible physical and emotional agony. One of my friends was sold as sex slaves and had served many men each day. She never got paid, and she was physically abused. But miraculously, one of her customers felt sorry for her, so he helped her to make a daring escape. But this kind of story is extremely rare. Many North Korean women are trying to flee in this kind of situation, but they are usually captured by the pimps. And they are not, in the end, they are just hopeless, and then they are not trying to escape anymore. So certainly individuals and organizations in China There are these work to help these women to find refuge in third countries, but this is very difficult because since most North Korean women in this kind of situation, they are traded as a merchandise, so they are closely guarded by their pimps or their husband's families. Only small percentage of North Korean defectors who, like me, you know, they entered China and they ever make it to safely in a third country like South Korea in the end. Despite all the misery and oppression in North Korea, people in the North Koreans endure, there are positive signs that North Korean society is continuing to change, despite the regime's efforts to brainwash them. The increasing use of cell phone is helping North Korean society. It's helping people awakening from the situation. Also, we are right now many defectors or international organizations. They are sending DVDs and USBs into the border through the long border. So many people right now awakening that at least they are not the best. The country is not the paradise. So we must continue to send information into North Korea and promote people to people-to-people exchange so that the North Korean can gain more understanding about the outside world. In Russia, the people believed in Lenin and Stalin for many years, but gradually the new generation stopped believing as they got more information and learned about the truth. So similarly, as more information continue to reach the North Korean people, they are realizing that the truth about the regime's propaganda, and many hope for change, but they live in an environment of fear and punishment. So they either attempt to escape or silently endure. So they clearly need all help. North Korean human rights tragedy must become one of the most international community's pressing issue. And I'm really thankful for the growing support in recent years, especially within United Nations and international organizations, but I feel we need to do more. So working together to raise awareness and inspiring change, I firmly believe that we can help North Korean people, and we might be their only hope. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much indeed for an extremely inspiring and powerful talk. And I know several people have sent in questions and so forth, so I'd like to ask Hyun So just a number of things that pick up from what she's already said and what she's written about, so you have a chance to hear. And one of the things that people find interesting but puzzling and really difficult is how do people live in their ordinary lives under this kind of ideology, which is Juche ideology, which is linked to another ideological configuration or idea around the military being first, and also the division of Korean society, North Korean society, into certain kinds of hierarchies, depending on how much you support the leader and the president, the eternal president, and the ideology of Juche. So can you say a little bit about that ideology, how it works in people's lives, in everyday life, and how do people inhabit it? Or yes. Is it through fear, or is it...
Absolutely. Because... many people actually ask me in the outside. They know that we are suffering under the dictatorship. We have many problems. But they wondered why North Korean citizens are not questioning about the regime. Why there's no revolution. So actually, that's the most common question I received. So my answer was, North Koreans, we never tasted what's freedom and democracy. So there's no comparison. We don't know what it looked like. That's why from the moment we were born, the propaganda education starts when we were five, from the kindergarten. And then we just believe everything. Not only every citizen, my parents' generation, it started from them already. And like, you know, I learned that our dear little Kim Il-sung, the first dictator, that he killed the Japanese enemies by crossing the rainbow from this mountain to other mountain, and then he crossed the river by floating on tree leaves, and then he created bombs from pine cones, and then he made rice from sands. With the sense he made into rice. So these are all really ridiculous things when you hear, right? But we believed that because from Indians, when I was growing up a little bit older, became, I was thinking breeze, the rainbow was actual breeze that I can cross. But later I found out actually that's not breeze. And then I didn't think about, oh, the proper, that's fake. At the time, I was thinking, wow, he was a god. That's why he can make it, that we are a human being, we can't make it at all. And then, yeah, everyday life, because without thinking about the dictator, we can't imagine our life, because he lives everywhere in North Korea, even in our here, every home. So beside the bathroom and glass, we all hang their pictures. So, for example, you know, my father, he was a military officer, was a very high-ranked officer, but from his behavior, we can understand. One time we had a big fire in North Korea, in my home, but instead of he saving me and my brother, what he was doing was he saved all the most important two possessions inside home. He risked his life by jumping into the firing house, and he saved the dear little two pictures. If he failed to save, then he would have been punished. So maybe outside people, it's hard to understand his behavior, but this is what most kids believe. That's what we have to do for our dear leader. So, yeah, living in North Korea, just it's hell, because in the end, after I escaped the country, right now I can feel how we were stupid, how I was ignorant. But same thing, because I was always questioning. When I was 14, I actually realized he was maybe not God, the dear leader, because our first dictator, Kim Il-sung, he died in 1994, and at his funeral, I realized I never thought he could be died, and then God couldn't die, isn't it? But he died at the time, so I realized maybe he's human. And then right now, after I living in China, I always, what was the most bothering me, how I believed him as a human, as God, and I really loyal to him. I just hate myself. And then actually, last year or 2 years ago, in South Korea, I saw one TV interview from, there's a dear leader who wrote, Zhang Jinsung, who wrote Dear Leader. He gave an interview in Korean, and then he said, until he met Kim Jong-il, until he was shaking with him, he thought he was God. And then at the time, look, he was adult, and then who was walking around him. And then he even believed he was God. And then certainly I never met our dear leader, so that answers everything.
Okay, and it's striking, and one of the questions, in fact, several people have asked similar questions. One of them is, you know, Kim Il-sung is presented as the creator of the world, you know, and Kim Jong-il as the person who controls the weather. And the ability to control the weather, and it's the way you're describing it, it's almost like a religious kind of idea. Can you say then, because you changed, you thought about it differently, you thought about it in a critical way, something didn't work for you in this kind of mythology, and that must also be, well, can you say a little bit more about that and how your growing skepticism began to develop and become something bigger?
When I was living in South Korea, I needed something. I need some religion to rely on, to release my stress, whatever. So I was trying many times to go to church, believing in God. So whenever I opened the Bible, many times I was shocked myself when I'm reading the Bible. Too many sentences, it's really familiar, which I never read the Bible in my life. But exactly that's like what I learned about the dear leaders in textbooks, in his memoir in North Korea. So in the end, what I found actually, the regime, the Kim Il-sung, he dictated our country according exactly the Bible. So, what was your question?
Yeah, so then you started becoming critical. Can you describe a little bit about your journey, about how you started getting critical about the regime, and then how... How you could express
people
that.
People living in North Korea, we are such a cut off from the outside world. More than 99% North Koreans, they don't know what's passport. And we don't know what's visa. Because we are not allowed to leave the country. And then, actually when I was living in China, I was shocked that there's even local TV besides the main TV channels. So in North Korea, we only have one TV channel. That's all propaganda TV channels. And then we are not only cut off from the outside information, but also we even don't hear, even domestic, inside, next city or next province, we don't know what's happening. That's why we just had to believe that what dear leader says, because especially he said, you know, said all bad things about the outside world, like America. The mostly they treat America is not human. They are like animals that we must kill them off, because we learned from the pictures about Americans with big nose, all military uniforms in there. And then I thought America only military survives in the country, and then we believed that because of America we were divided, and then the Americans horribly tortured North Koreans during the Korean War. So, and then even what was the most shocking to me, that Americans are even today, they are colonizing South Korea, and which they are executing South Korean students even today, and then South Koreans live as slaves. So we also learned South Koreans from picture, the South Korean kids on the street, like they didn't have shoes or winter coats, they were shivering, their hunger. So whenever I see those pictures from textbook, I feel I was really lucky. At least I have shoes, you know, at least we don't have to suffer as much as what South Koreans do. What if during the Korean War, what if we became South Koreans, then we will be suffered like them. That's why I feel really lucky that by having the dear leader, that's why we just loyal to the government with our hearts. And then what was the most, another shocking to me, almost every day you heard from the regime, from the news, that America or Japan, they are always trying to attack North Korea. That's why we have to make a nuclear to protect our countries. That's why we were proud of having nuclear. And then I thought, why they just, Americans, why they keep us in safe? Why always every day bothers North Koreans? That's why we hate America. And then, but also we learned some countries very nice things, like Cuba and Iran. But in this, then actually after escape the country, I realized that all dictators are, you know, they are friends together. So that's why I was very, you know, but on the same time, we are loyal to government with our heart and fear together. Because we grew up with constant public executions, and then people, whole family members disappearing in the middle of the night. We know they are taken to the political prison camp. Why we were more scared of about the political prison camp? Because we exactly don't know what's happening inside. And I even don't know where it is. But we know there is. And then so we know somebody who making mistakes by saying wrong things, those people were going to send those crazy political prison camp, not economic criminals, only political criminals. That's why we just be careful to what we are saying. We shouldn't be questioned about the regime. So in school, like, you know, we only have to, when we take in class, we are not allowed to have questions to the teacher or professor. We only have to hear. Of course, we can have really minor questions. We are human also. But very serious things, we can't have questions. But while all North Koreans, they don't know about the truth. But I think
I believe my father, at least he knew something about the regime, or about our country is not the best, because he was visiting to China several times on a business trip. He saw, right? But whenever he came back, I asked what it looked like. He never mentioned any words. So I thought he was hating me. He don't want to share anything. But later, actually, I found out that people, like my father, when they go to the outside of the country and when they coming back to North Korea, they have to sign a paper with the regime that they shouldn't reveal any single words what they hear in the outside. Once he revealed, he know the answer. Not only kill him, but kill all our family together. We disappeared. That's why, you know, North Koreans controlled very severely. That's why we couldn't knew about the outside world. And then, again, I'm strongly against the tourism right now, the tourism to Pyongyang, because that made me, one of the main reasons I was so brainwashed was because of the tourism. I saw so many white foreigners visiting North Korea, Pyongyang, and then they are showing their best respect to our dear leader, bowing to statues and then giving the flowers. Exactly, they do the same thing what we do every day. So, exactly, the regime told us that Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, especially Kim Il-sung, the first dictator, was the best human being in this world. All human beings in this world, they are respecting him. They are treating him as a god. That's why it's proved to me that exactly, look, the foreigners all the way coming to Korea to respect our dear leader. So why not? That's why we just, that's one of the main functions it worked for me. But we have big family. The big family changed me a lot.
Yep.
Because, as I said, that people just die on the streets. I mean, in my life, I saw people dying in front of me. We saw public executions. It's so common to see public executions in North Korea. It's insane to see. But in the end, if you see too much, you feel nothing. And then we just take it as automatic, as like part of our life. But when I see the people who's dying on the streets, it doesn't make sense because I thought my country was the best. How that people can die for starvation? I mean, I saw people dying for starving in movies or, you know, in novels or world period, but certainly if you were living, you know, modern society and then the North Korean people were dying, it doesn't make sense. And then since from the moment that, because at the time I was a little bit old enough, like 15, 16, 17, that I, one day I found that actually our television could pick up Chinese TV signals. Because in North Korea, we only have one channel, so we don't have to try to pick up several TV channels. So, but one day, but we always had the government officials there visiting house there several times. One time is to check every the pictures in house about the dear leaders, whether we have dust on the picture or not. So they check, their uniform is really awesome. They are really coming, like, officially, with white gloves, and then not only one person, like three or four people every time coming together, and then they just wipe the surface of glass. And then if we have dust on the glass, it's considered our loyalty is less. That's why it's really serious that we have to wipe the glass. We can't wipe with normal materials. We have to use very special white color materials to even wiping the dust. And then the other thing is also that's government policies. They are coming to house to check the channels, whether our TV can receive the Chinese TV or not. In North Korea, even today, there's not many people have TV. This is a reality. So they already knew which house have TV. If we buy TV, we have to register to the regime. So they all have the data. And then they just come to every house. And they, when they turn the channel, change, if there's a Chinese TV appeared, then they are scrolling the channels with the bench. I don't know in English, with the bench. And then they just put the tapes on the front of TV. So from there, I just, what they are doing? And then later I found that actually there's a Chinese TV I can see if I do my best. That's why in the end, I just kept my room. Even my parents didn't know that I was watching. Only nighttime I can watch myself in my room. That's what I did. And then Yeah, what was the most shocking to me in Chinese TV that in North Korea we are banned to having dye hair or wearing jeans, having necklace and rings, because we consider that these are capitalism, which in the end will bring society decay. But just shocked that Chinese people can have that on publicly on the TV. How it is possible? Are they not killed by doing so? Or yeah, that's, and then even advertisements that even water, this kind of, just for me it seems nothing, but they can be advertised on TV. So these little small things really changed my mind, and then that's why at the time, at least I can, because from early 90s that we suffered power shortages. From beginning we had maybe once a week, but later more, we become severe, like we couldn't even see straightly 1 week, and then in the end straightly 1 month, something like that. So because my home and China was really close, it's a surprise, only maybe 10 meters distance, so I can't even talk with Chinese people through the border, like my distance to your distance, I can't even talk. That's why I'm just shocked that while we are suffering, every night mostly we were living in a black hole, but the Chinese side, they even have street lights and neon signs. And then my country was the best. We didn't respect the Chinese at all. We considered Chinese very low person, which regime told us to do it. And then they have much better situation. That's why every situation doesn't make sense to me. That's why either Chinese TV is a fake, whatever. I just wanted to see the China, the inside China, not the border side. Maybe border side they can put something, another propaganda. That's why I wanted to see the inside with my own eyes. But I didn't mean that I want to escape the country. At the time, you know, I didn't know the definition of escaping or what's the meaning of refugees. I was thinking there's a lot of smugglers, actually. My family also, we smuggled a lot with China. That's the only way we can make money. And then, so I thought, what everybody does, I mean, mostly men doing smuggling, so they can come back, which my brother did several times as a young boy. He played with Chinese kids when he was growing up on the border. That's why not me? That's why I just took huge risk. I just tried, but people actually ask me, how did you cross the border? But as we know that most North Korean defectors are having a difficult time when they're crossing the border, they have to risk their life. This is a fact. Even today, after the young dictator Kim Jong-un took power, he ordered the border guards to shoot the people, even daytime, whoever crossing the border. From 2011, it just started. And even today, very recently, they started building the walls on the border. Because in the past, when I opened the window and door, I can see beautiful view of China and the trees and the river sounds and then the people, Chinese people coming picnic to the riverside. But if I can imagine if I open the door right now, what I see is concrete colors, dark colors, nothing to... I mean, when I see that, it's totally, really insane right now. But at that time, because I was living right next to the border, we had a really good relationship with border guards. They are my uncles and my brothers, elder brothers. So they helped me to cross the border, and they even guided me where to cross. But certainly they didn't know that I was not coming back to North Korea, because myself, I didn't know it would be, the moment I crossed the border, I didn't know there would be last minute with my hometown. I would be separated from my family for so long, and I would be hunted by the North Chinese government. Just, I was very naive, but I was brave. So the moment I was crossed the border changed everything. I escaped the country to find the truth. Not for starvation, but after I escaped the country, I suffered a lot. Because certainly I became suddenly orphan. I mean, nobody gonna support me. I was 17. And in North Korea, I never suffered in terms of money, because North Korea is a very unfair society. It's, as professor said, we have a social hierarchy. From the moment we are born, depends on our grandparents' records, we are divided. So all North Korean citizens, we don't make decisions at all in our life, never. Always government told us go to wear something. So we just, according what regime told, we just, so people from upper class, even though they are not that smart, they can go to the top universities and really move up in the society really fast. But on the other hand, the people from low class, no matter their how genius, like my friend in school, she passed the university entrance exam, but she couldn't go because of her family background. And then what was waiting for those students, when we finished high school, all names, the list, the government already controls. According to the family background, the people from low class, they are sending as a minor, which nobody wants to go there to work there entire their life. So they are sending people from low class, mining companies. That's why, you know, there's many North Korean defectors who came from Hamgyong North Province. There's many people from mining company. They are almost from there. That's why they were sending there. And then
this is a system called Songbun.
Yeah, Songbun system as farmers. And so in North Korea, when we marry, I mean, we marry with love. But in North Korea, the first thing our parents asking, what's his or her status, Songbun system? That's the mandatory. If the Songbun system is different, it's almost impossible to happen. So, like, as I said in my book, that one of my uncle, actually, he chose the farmer woman because he loved her so much. So he gave up his status. So the most ridiculous situation in North Korea, the people from upper class and married the lower class, the people from upper class have to move down to the lower class, not lower people go to the upper class. But when I went in China, what I realized, Chinese girls who love from countryside girls, they love to marry city men because they want to change their status to city citizens. It's completely opposite to what I had in North Korea.
And the Songbun system is decided on loyalty to the regime.
Yeah.
So you're sorted based on that loyalty, and that transmits through.
For example, sometimes I hate my grandfather, because sometimes all the hardship I had, I just blame I want to blame to somebody why I was born in North Korea. Or sometimes I complain myself why I was born in there. And then the blame goes to my grandfather, why he didn't escape the country during the Korean War. Because in the 1950s, there's many people escaped from North Korea to South Korea who disagree with the regime. But my grandfather was, at the time already, he was the member of North Korean Workers' Party. And then my grandmother, when she was 70, she already joined the Workers' Party, which is a very unusual situation for a 17 years a young girl can join, which means they are really loyal to the government, support the Kim family a lot. That's why they were praised in North Korea. My grandfather was a local official. That's why they never escaped. But in the end, I was the result from the... That's why I just... So people who supported the Kim Il-sung, or first the dictator from the Japanese imperialists who fought against the Japanese, or again the who fought in Korean War against the South Korean Americans. So those people is considered in the top lower class. And on the other hand, the people from lower class, religious people, the landlords, or spies, or who against the regime, and criminals, or the people, the family members, one of family member, if who went escaped to South Korea during the Korean War, then all rest of the family members, their status is low class. So there's a lot of people in the low class. So more than, I think, really a lot, more than 50% of people, the citizens in North Korea from low class.
Okay, and I'm just going to ask one sort of raise one area that people have been asking a lot about, which is, and people are fascinated by this, that there has to be dissent in this total kind of society. So how do people talk to each other when they're critical of the regime? And then what do you see as, the possibilities of that, given that, North Korea has a walled internet system, which is very tightly controlled. But there's still maybe other forms of media coming in, other forms of dissent. Do you see that, or do you see that possibility?
No. The regime continues even today. They are controlling people's mind so strongly. So as a North Korean citizen, it's even impossible we even think about talking about the government in private meeting. So being ignorant, we should know about politics, and being ignorant is the best way to survive in the regime. So in North Korea, if four men gathered together on site, it's illegal, it's banned. But of course, we saw from media a lot of just massive people gathered on the square or something. That's different. That's we gathered under the regime, under the dear leader. We have to praise. So that's not considered that. But in the private meeting, four people, we can gather together. So every North Korean citizen, we know that. Even between wife and husband can't trust together. Because there are some examples that after they divorced, one person told the government about the other person's behavior, what she or what he told in the past. That's why the other wife or husband was sent to prison. So that's why even my mom told me to not say anything bad, because we know. She just told me that even daytime or nighttime, mice or, you know, the birds can hear. So only in living in North Korea, only between I can't trust my parents and siblings. That's the only way we trust. But it is somehow changes, but still many North Korean defectors living in South Korea, they believe what I said this way. But there's something different. It's a change, which is many people hard to believe. Because, for example, when my mom came to South Korea in 2010, and one episode was she was a best friend with all local governor, really top officer. And then when my mom and when my brother visited his home during the lunchtime, at the time Kim Jong-il appeared on the TV. I think it was 2009 that he appeared on the TV, and then the officers he turned off the TV with the remote quickly, and he said, "Bullshit," in Korean. And then so my mom said she was shocked how he can say to the dear leaders he's bullshitting. And then after he turned off, he just blamed, you know, he's my AZ, blah, blah, blah. He's doing all fake on the TV. He said he's just suffering a lot without having meals. He's serving to all citizens every day, which is all fake. And then when I heard that, I was just shocked. What if my mom, my family is told to the government? Then he will lose a lot of things. It's killing him. But it shows me that people, somehow it's changed through the big famine. So people, they're building trust together. If they want to trust somebody, by sharing the information, they can building the relationship together. But not everyone. For example, last year, my aunt was trying to cross the border with family because I helped, but she was sent to prison last year, immediately, before cross the border. Because you know why? Her best friend told to the government that she was trying to escape the country. Same thing. This happened more later. So it depends on who you are, it's different. But compared to the governor's situation, it's a really big change is coming in North Korea.
Okay, and one of the things that you said that was quite important, which is about tourism and increasing tourism, and certainly in Britain there's been at least the pretense of a little bit of opening. So, for example, TV companies have gone there to film elite schools and apparently talk to some of the students there. And you've been saying something very different about the damaging effects of this. Can you say a bit more about that? Because several people have asked about that. A couple of the questions were about people who've gone on these tourist visits, and they know that they're being shown only a limited amount of what's going on. But I just wanted your thoughts on the broader repercussions of that.
Frankly, I think there's a pros and cons always, but to me, to support the foreign tourism in Pyongyang, we have more cons than pros. The North Korean regime never agrees unless it benefits for them. We shouldn't forget about that. because they want to earn money. Of course, people, the foreign tourists, by this time, they know the regime, this money is going to support the regime, and then maybe what they see is not really real. Somehow they know these kind of basic things. But some people also who's against with my idea, but somehow it's benefits when we go to the inside. People, by seeing us, they can compare with outside. Of course, that is true, but my point is it's much less benefits for that, because people in Pyongyang, their entire their life, they are trained, brainwashed people, and they are more coming upper class. They mostly, many people, they know what's going on in the outside. So when they see the foreign tourists, it's not affect them that much. Because also when I was growing up, not only people in Pyongyang, I was from border city, and in school the government provided long papers about the many possible questions and the many possible answers, examples. So we don't know what questions. So the regime that made the paper was always told us that foreign tourists always trying to slander our country. They want to make a problem, and when they go back to their country, they're going to make our country ridiculous. That's why we were even banned to receive cans, even small gift. If when the moment we receive that, maybe they're going to take picture and then they're going to describe us as a, you know, bigots. That's why we have really bad images about the foreigners. They're only, we just, only they're going to try to find some problem in my country. So whenever they give us any questions, we are ready to answer. Every answer is included, dear little Janae. So we was a human robot. So some foreigners, they're really shocked. They said when they went random place in Pyongyang, they asked really random people that the question, the answer was very genuine for them. So they could hard to believe that's fake. They said at least I believe what I met those people is real, and that the answer is real. No, we just, from the kindergarten we just trained what to have to answer. That's why there's not benefited them much.
Okay, and just a final thing before I open up to the floor. One of the, you know, North Korea, the regime runs a system of prison camps. Yeah. And it's estimated that around 200,000 people are within those prison camps, and they're used also as a source of slave labor, effectively slave labor. And human rights organizations have estimated that around 10,000 people a year die in those camps. Can you say a little bit about that?
Certainly, I never experienced prison camp, but as I said, that we know we have a political prison camp, but the title is different in North Korea. There's a title something, Sipsaho, Siparo Kwalisa, means Sipar is number 18, Kwalisa is something management place, something like that. To me, like a detention center, which is the title looks not really serious than political prison camp, but we are more scared to be sent there than normal prison, because I have the personal experience. My one of the relatives, he has actually experienced this horrible life. He came to North Korea during 1970s, I guess, or 80s. He was Korean Chinese, and at the time he thought North Korea was going to communist paradise. He just believed the regime's propaganda, so he just gave up China, and then he came to North Korea. And then later, actually, many years later, he found out this is not true. That's why he wanted to cross back into China again. So when he was crossing the border, he was caught. And then in the end, he was sentenced to 30 years, and then he was sent to a political prison camp. And his son was at the time a baby when he was sent to prison. And then after he grew up, he tried several times to see his father. He just wanted to see the face, because he never saw his father's face, but every time he was denied access. And then after he died, I don't know how he got the message from the government. He got the message he died. Even that's for me surprising. So even the dead bodies, his son couldn't retrieve for a proper burial. So people, the regime still continues even today. because of public executions, and then because of that, the political prison camp. So every single step we are doing is to not being sent there. Because of my friend's father, I mentioned on my speech, but her father just said, just this system unfair. He said only one word. And he said to his best friend during their having, you know, air calls at night. And then his friend, because his friend thinks he is doing right things to the regime. We learned, we trained, we have to kill the government. Somebody who slander our country, it's not right things to, you know. That's why his friend, I'm sure he believed, that's why he did. So from that time, my friends, she never saw his father, even today. And then her three siblings, including mother, four members were forcibly sent to the countryside. In North Korea, the mountainous areas is really difficult to survive. It's a really little lie in there. So they were forcibly to sent there. So it's really common in North Korea. Sometimes you say, oh, wake up one night and the whole family disappeared. And then, actually, I was always wondering why people disappear in the middle of the night. Why not daytime? I didn't see it, just that they were taken. And actually, I found the answer after I came to South Korea. So the regime, when they're taking the whole family, there's no obvious something reason to say to people, right? That's why they're just taking at night while every people sleeping. That's why just that they were disappeared.
Okay, thank you. We have time for questions, and I know many people will have questions for Ms. Lee, so I will take your questions in groups of three. And also you'll see our two wonderful stewards, if they could indicate themselves, please, and stand up, who'll come with a microphone to the people that I indicate. And so please wait until they're there giving you the mic so that everyone in the audience can hear your question very clearly. And I know this can cause a short delay, and we will try and hurry it up, but please be patient. And also, when you ask your question, can I please request that you state your name and your institutional or organizational affiliation. And bear in mind also that I want to try and get as many questions as possible, so no long speeches. Your question should be in length shorter than the length of the answer that you expect. That's a good rule of thumb. Who would like to go first? Okay, somebody right at the very front here.
Hi, my name is Layla. I'm a human rights master's student. I just want to say thank you, and I'm really humbled by what you had to say on behalf of the Masters of Human Rights students as well. We really thank you for coming.
If you could just hold the microphone a bit closer to you.
Sorry. So towards the end of your speech at the beginning, you started to say some things about how you think in the future there are some avenues that perhaps we can start to work together to begin to create small change in North Korea. And I just wondered what you thought some of those options might be in a really tangible, practical sense. We're obviously all very moved by what you've said. And I just wonder, what can we do? And whether you think it's sort of more at the political level or whether civil society does have a role to play. Thank you.
Actually, before you answer, can I just take another question? Can I take one from the middle there?
Hi, I'm Janice, and I'm an undergraduate law, and I'm president for Women Leaders of Tomorrow Society here at LSE. First, Ms. Lee, thank you for coming to speak to us tonight. And I was just wondering, when you left North Korea, did you ever feel kind of excited or surprised in good or bad ways about kind of the freedoms that women received in comparison to North Korea? Thank you.
Okay, if you'd like to discuss the first question, which is about what are the practical options, what are the practical forms of perhaps international work or solidarity and so forth that could be undertaken. And the second question, if people didn't hear that, was about the perception of the world outside based on the rights of women and other freedoms and so forth.
No, those gay people are suffering under the dictators for 7 decades right now. And while we are ignoring the problem, even today, even at this moment, the young dictator, his committee for human rights, he's not even care about what we are talking about in the outside. But what I'm most concerned about is, you know, always North Korean human rights issues in international community, it's not considered the priority. That's why whenever we all issues pumped up on the media, and then soon it's disappeared, and then soon people forget about that. That's why, you know, I just want to ask you to keep. We can do start from simple things. Keep sharing the story, tweeting, sharing on social media, and everybody to let them know about this. Because by this time, what I found, people mostly they know we have a crazy government. We have suffering, but they don't really fully realize how we are suffering under the system. So I believe that if you tell your government, urging your government, that you do care about the North Korean human rights issues, then maybe they will in the end will consider this is a really important issue. So when they're talking about the people, this will become priority. So if international community like UN, or, you know, NATO and EU, just the pressure on China. Because China is the main key right now. So to pressure on China to let them stop support North Korea, that's all what I want. But yes, also it seems it is difficult to make Chinese government to change. But what if really we do care about that in the end, everybody, then they have to change. The China have to stop support. So that's my message, that just raising awareness is really important.
Can I just follow on from that and add to that? One of the ways that pressure has been seen is through nuclear diplomacy. You know? And I think President Obama referred to the US policy as strategic patience. And I just wondered what you thought about what other international actions there could be in addition to the pressure on China, or how do you think, so for example, the EU might be involved in supporting human rights in North Korea?
I thought you were talking to them. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's basically, obviously, the role of America is key here, and America is not going to pressurize China in any great big way because its role has, and its view has been what it calls strategic patience. And obviously, the issue around nuclear weapons has been key, and intercontinental ballistic missiles. So in that context, it almost seems impossible for the international community to really do something that you feel is tangible, and you seem to be saying that really the hope seems to be with us or with civil society organizations. Is that?
Yeah. I think actually one of a lot of questions I got was people asked me, do you think North Korean regime gonna use the nuclear, should the United States or other countries? But because as a North Korean citizen, we were happy by having the nuclear, and then we were proud of that. So when we failed in the test, so many people was depressed. They just thought the dear leader can't make anything. There's no failure. But one time, just the shock even we had. So actually, many outside people, they were shocked that North Korean people were proud of having the nuclear weapon. But the question is whether the regime going to use or not. Because in my interprets, the dictator, he knows once he's going to use the nuclear, it means he's, for him, suicide bomb. I mean, he knows the North Korean military capability can't compare with even South Korea. So he knows he can't win in that game. That's why he's only why he's threatening with nuclear is to keep his kingdom right now. He's not interested to conquer the other country. Only he just wants to keep the North Korea to protect, to have it. So that's why I'm saying, whenever we have news in South Korea, even many South Koreans are scared. It's just they're buying water, everything to prepare for in case there's another war. To me, like, don't worry, you know, never gonna happen.
And this question.
Yeah. Exactly. After I escaped to China, it was paradise to me. What I saw from TV and then what I saw in real life was absolutely similar. Because the city I went to was Shenyang. Shenyang was a pretty big city in China. So, I didn't know what's freedom. To me, learning about freedom, the definition of freedom, it took me for many years. But the moment I crossed the border, when I arrived in China, I mean, I was lucky that actually I had Chinese relatives. That's why I could even thinking about a visit to China. If I don't have relatives, I would never maybe cross the border. So when I arrived in Chinese relatives' home, you know, I don't need to turn up the volume from the TV with new sound, or I can freely watch the Chinese TV without blocking the window. And then I could listen to the source screen music loudly without turning the volume down. That was, to me, maybe to you guys it's really considered nothing, but to me, like always I was hiding, you know, myself under my blanket, just I listened. That's why to me it was, this is like a paradise that I don't have to do those things. That especially, you know, to when I go to the other cities, that taking what was the having the train ticket or bus ticket on site, and then I can go whenever freely. Of course, we know China has many problems, but compared to North Korea, it's paradise. It's a heaven to me. So, because in North Korea we are not really freely allowed to leave other even cities because we have to have a travel certificate. That's why without just. To me, it was a paradise that without even having the certificate, you just, with the money you buy freely, you go, and then there's a lot of restaurants, it's run by privately, and there's singing room, everything just, it's just shocked. So that's why I actually, at the time, somehow I feel I don't want to go back to North Korea. Because I feel, but I didn't know at the time the brilliant new world is not for me. Once I don't go back to North Korea, my status will be changed. I didn't know about that. I thought that's all for me. It's waiting for me. That's why actually many journalists there asked me that when you heard from your mom over the phone call, when you found out that you couldn't go back to North Korea, what's your feeling? What's your thought? Maybe they expected that it's a horrible answer, that I was very, you know, depressed, everything. But my answer was, actually, I was very happy at the time. So that's why with that emotion, I was living in guilty for many years. Somehow, I think I didn't want to go back to North Korea. Because living with the family for 17 years, I didn't see the value of family. I thought, I didn't know you would be separated forever by doing so. I amazed with the new brilliant world in front of me. And then when I heard that I couldn't go back, of course I'm human, so I feel like, then when can I meet my family? But I didn't know it would be long separation. And then, but on the same time, I was very happy. But soon, a few months later, I just found out actually, I started becoming miss my mom, my brother, and more of my friends, and more of my country. And then since then, I just cried every night because when I found out the answer that I miss my home, but by the time to go back to North Korea was too late. That's why I even talked to the moon because I believe the moon is the only one in this world. There's no seven moon. So my mom maybe can watch the moon. That's the only way I can communicate with my mom. That's why I just living with guilt so many years in China, and I even didn't celebrate my birthday even today because I felt that I wanted to give my mom birthday gift when I can. But when I was living in North Korea, I always received my parents. But instead of I thanked to my parents, I thanked to the dear leader. I just, you know, hugging the a gift, and I just bought the pictures where it hanged in every home. Because I thought all the good things it came from the dear leader. For us, the dear leader considered the number one than all parents, all family. That's why when I was living in China, I was so guilty that I feel like I never gave birthday gift to my mom or cook for her. That's why just I don't feel I deserve to have any good things, good meals, any good things. So I was harshing for myself, torturing myself. So right now, actually many people told me that you deserve to have birthday celebration. But right now, I used that kind of life so long. It's more than one decade. And then to me, like, it's uncomfortable to celebrate for my birthday, for myself. I want to do some to other people, my mom, my brother, friends, but not for me. So it's really sad that I, yeah.
I mean, those are extremely powerful words, and we appreciate that and how unbearably hard it must have been and is for you. So thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
I think we're running out of time, and I would just like to ask Hyeon So, were she to give, if you were to give advice to, if you were able to talk to the ordinary North Korean, ordinary person, citizen, and were able to give them advice, what would you tell them?
That's good. Actually, many people also ask me that, what kind of material to send into North Korea can change North Korean people's mind to break their brainwash? People ask me, does that movie interview helps? But to me, you know, which is the South Korean dramas and the Hollywood movie, especially South Korean dramas. There's no politics in the drama, only love stories. It's a daily life. It helps people awakening from their brainwash more than anything. Because if you tell directly to them who was seriously brainwashed in this planet, you are suffering under the dictators. Please walk up. Something, if you tell directly or make documents or videos about that, I think people will be, they're going to have keep distance. They will not try to believe in that. But because of the South Korean dramas, because of the drama, actually many people fleeing the country, fled the country, and even today fleeing the country. So when South Korean drama started, fled into North Korea, the regime felt very dangerous. It's going to hurt the regime in the end. So they smart. They used another propaganda at the time to the people. Don't watch the South Korean dramas. It's all fake. It's propaganda dramas for you guys made for on purpose. That's why actually many of them believed they're watching fake one. It's not real. But anyway, the story is interesting, so they are just addicted to watching. But like, that's why my mom, who came to North Korea in 2010, you know Gwanghwamun, right? Gwanghwamun is the one of the developed area in Seoul. When she was stepping on the street, she didn't say any words at first, and she said, wow, it is true. So I said, what do you mean? I mean, she never didn't say any words, only said the words, so what do you mean? And then she said, the cars on the streets, the traffic congestion, it's all true. So I said, but it is true, what do you mean? And then she said, I saw the South Korean dramas on TV, and then the regime told us that's all fake. So that's why she believed that, especially maybe she was shocked that all the cars on the street, the traffic congestion, she believed that to the South Korean movie makers to make the street busy scene, they had to gather all the cars in the country. That's why she was really shocked. That's not fake. It's real. So even the little small things, is, that's why it's, there's no words for her, that she just immediately woke up from her brainwash. But certainly other things is really difficult for her still believe, because we as a North Korean citizen, we were brainwashed. My mom was brainwashed for nearly 60 years. The South Korean war started by South Koreans. Every year in the anniversary in the morning, the regime told us, 3 a.m. in the morning, when citizens are sleeping in the deeply, the Americans and South Korean enemies killed citizens with a tank. That's why we just hate a lot of hate for Americans and South Koreans. That's why when we come to South Korea, actually the war started by North Korea, so it was really for me also difficult to accept it. So even today, my mom said, please show me the evidence. So how can I show the evidence? But I believe that is the starting from North Korea. So this, my point is, even little the meaningless drama can change people rather than we just say directly in words. So the visual things is really important.
Okay, thank you. And I think you've encapsulated completely how the funny and the absolutely tragic can be mixed up, and what a horrifying place that is to be in. Now, I think we've run out of time for questions, and I thought it was more important to listen to Hyeonsa and her words. So hopefully you'll have a chance to talk to her outside. But before we leave, can I remind you about an important event organized by the Center for next week, which is Dushan Dave from India speaking on justice, accountability and human rights in India next Wednesday at 6:30 in the Old Theatre. And if you'd like to be kept informed of Center events and other activities, please sign up to our email alerts and also follow us on Twitter at LSE Human Rights. Now, before we leave, can I please just say from all of us a major thank you to Hyeonsa Lee for coming to speak to us this evening. It's been an absolute pleasure to listen to you and to host you. But may I also thank Sarah Ulspare, Isabel Jones, the Korea Future Forum, and its committee members who kindly volunteered their time to make this event happen, and also your thoughtful contributions and stimulating discussion. Thank you very much indeed.